Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most. We're going to jump right into another pandemic episode of Wake Up Hollywood. Tonight, our special guest is guitar wizard and prolific composer Mauricio Ibanez, right? Did I say it right, or is it Ibanez?
You can say whatever, you know. It doesn't matter.
How do you say it?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Of course, of course. How do you say your last name?
It's actually, you know, Ibanez.
Ibanez.
Oh, yeah.
That's the proper way.
I don't really care about that. You know, I mean, on websites and stuff, I usually just put Ibanez because it's easier, you know? The ñ sound and the accent, whatever, you know, it's so complicated, you know?
So I have to ask, was that your first guitar just because of the last name?
Well, yeah, people used to call me Ibanez here in Santiago, Chile. Because I always use that brand of guitars, you know. I have like three of them here, so.
You have like your own signature already, man.
Sort of, yeah. But I don't get paid shit for it, so.
Well, you know what? That comes with time, man. Sometimes, you know, in the early stages, I remember when I would tour with the band, I would get paid $150 to play with a full band. And I was losing money. But
You
know, that's how you kind of, you know, cut your teeth, unfortunately, until you get like more notoriety and more fans and more of a market. But you know what? I know that place. But there's something really exciting about those early stages of the career. And you've got so many records, too, so you're already knee deep in it. But there's something where it's like you just don't stop the music from flowing because you're so focused and driven. And as you get older, like me, I start to lose a little bit of that, you know. So I wanted to ask you.
You know, I think I'm relentless. Is that a word?
Yep.
Pretty much. So, yeah. The thing is that, you know, in my early 20s, I was very influenced by progressive rock and progressive metal and Dream Theater and John Petrucci, the Shredders, you know. I wanted to play like them, you know. I wanted to play fast, alternate picking, you know, sweep picking, all that crazy shit. And I was so into it, you know, practicing so much. But when I got to LAMA, you know, Los Angeles Music Academy, in those years, in 2010 and 2011, I was like writing music. And it was so complicated because everything that I wrote was so difficult to play and it sounded like shit. So I was like, man, what the hell am I doing, you know? So I got into your songwriting class, and it was so inspiring for me, you know, because it showed me a different perspective of making music. And that pretty much changed my whole perspective about the whole deal.
Wow, man, I'm humbled. Thank you.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'm so honored to be, you know, your
student. You know what's funny? Yeah. What's funny, seeing you in class, you're one of the few people, and there were a couple, but you were one of the few people that really listened, took everything to heart. You were asking questions. You were engaging. You had situations. You're like, when I'm in this situation writing, what's my way out? And those are the people that end up doing it. You know, like that's what I noticed. It's like, because I was like that when I was a young songwriter in a songwriting class. So I just recognized that same thing in young songwriters. And you were like that. You were like, I'm going to do this no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, with your experience, you can tell, you know, because you have to check so many students, you know, on what they're doing and stuff. So, yeah, well, at that point in my life, I got to know Steven Wilson and Porcupine Tree.
Yeah.
Who is pretty much the modern king of progressive rock. And he changed my life pretty much, you know, because his music is progressive, but it's different. It's not the virtuoso kind of thing, you know?
It's very musical. It's more, that's what I love.
Yeah, much more like focused on textures, you know, and layers of sound and beautiful harmonies and beautiful chord progressions. So that inspired me to write better music, basically.
I remember when I saw him play live for the first time, this is like maybe a year ago, I emailed you about it because I'd seen so many posts about you talking about his music. And I knew of his music and I knew some of his music from albums, but I'd never seen him live. And
yeah,
you know, you were like, man, he is just on fire all the time. And you were right. He's a tremendous musician. It's like you see guys like that and you're like, man, you're taking the virtuoso part and you're making it musical and like accessible. And that's the best thing I think any musician can do, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would say that the best thing at the end is just to be true to yourself, you know, on musical terms, you know, because what comes from your heart, you know, it's the best stuff, I would say, you know?
And so do you spend, yeah, because you've got crazy chops, which is pretty amazing. And also, and you're really prolific too. It's like, I really love is that you have the discipline. In some ways, you have discipline that's like far beyond your years. Like, what motivates you? Or what is your kind of like schedule? Do you practice for a little bit? Do you kind of run with an idea? Do you start tracking right away? Do you kind of map it all out?
Well, like I told you before, you know, on my 20s, I was so obsessed with guitar technique, you know, but it was getting me nowhere because I wasn't writing music. So I would say that after I returned to Chile, you know, my country, I actually started another career. You know, I started a English translation, you know, English, Spanish, and I got into linguistics, you know, and all that stuff that is kind of literature sort of thing, you know. And I got my bachelor degree in English and all that stuff. But during my third year, I was so obsessed with music. It started to play in my head nonstop, and it was driving me insane. So I was going to class, and I remember not paying attention at all because music was just there, and it was just freaking playing to death inside of my brain. You know?
You know what? When you have those moments, it's like, you have to listen to it. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
It's like the most deafening sound within your soul, you know?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's like you cannot ignore it. You know, it's impossible, you know? And the thing is that I would say that in 2015, I really found my focus, you know, my true purpose as a musician, you know? So right there, I started writing music like crazy. And I haven't stopped to this day.
That's amazing.
Pretty much.
How often do you think you write every week or every month? Like, what do you think you're...
These days, I'm pretty much writing a song per day.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
That's amazing. I don't do that. I'll start stuff. I'll come back to it. Usually, it takes me 2 or 3 days to write and arrange something full on from beginning to end.
Yeah, I can do it, you know, in one day if I'm like really fired up, or maybe 2 days and have the whole production, you know. So I'm insane, I think.
No, you know what it is? It's you have fire, man. You know, it's like I remember when I first started playing shows and recording, I was super prolific. Like I was writing all the time. It was like I couldn't stop. And now it's like it's definitely more focused and calculated. But sometimes you miss that, like just the fire, just kind of running in and out of your soul, and you're just like trying to catch up with writing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say this. You know that before the pandemic shit started, I was 100% committed to this. you know, on full throttle. And after this pandemic started, I just went from 100 to 200, you know.
Wow.
It's like I doubled my output, basically. So it's pretty common to see people, you know, getting all depressed and going like, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? I'm going to stare at the ceiling and not do anything kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
But and I don't blame those people, because it's hard for them, you know, to be committed.
You know, I was just having this conversation with another friend of mine who's an artist. And it's like we were talking about how, you know, the pandemic is kind of not a lot has changed for artists, because we're always working on stuff remotely or on our own. And it's actually given us more of like, okay, now we can really focus, or we can put things together in a more constructive way. The one thing that we're not used to is the rest of the world being in the same schedule and having, you know, nothing open like it was, or not having anything available. So the weird thing is, like, you know, being an artist, we're always working like this. I feel like in a lot of ways nothing's changed, but then everything has changed too, you know.
Yeah, that's true. It's like a contradiction, but it's absolutely true, you know, what you're saying, you know. I mean, I would say that as a musician, I am extremely fortunate, you know, to have my own fully equipped recording studio, you know, with a control room and an instruments room. So I just do whatever the hell I want.
And what do you use? Do you use Pro Tools?
So I don't have any trouble.
What do you use?
Well, I used Pro Tools. I used Pro Tools when I was back at...
I lost you. Are you there?
So yeah.
Wait, Mauricio, say that one more time. We lost you for a second. You said you did Pro Tools, and then I lost you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been using Reaper for a long time now.
So tell me what made the change for you? What made you love Reaper more?
Well, the license is a lot cheaper.
You program all your drums. Do you play bass and other instruments as well, or you just play guitar and then you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I usually you know use whatever fits best for the song that I'm working on, you know. So some songs will require me playing a real bass, which I have, and some other songs will require, you know, Spectrasonic Trillion with a synthesizer bass, whatever, you know, whatever it takes. It doesn't matter.
Do you find that, you know, when you're using the recording software, you're using it like an instrument? Like, do you start your sessions and you just start with a beat, or you start with something, or do you kind of start with a riff or like a scale and then just start kind of merging into writing?
It's different all the time. You know, sometimes I have these earworms, you know, songs that come to me from thin air, you know, out of nowhere. And they become so persistent that I cannot ignore them, you know?
Yeah.
And I have the whole thing playing in my head, and I'm like, man, I have to do this shit, because if I don't do it, I'm going to go crazy. Mm. So I just get into the studio and get it done, basically. And some other times, you know, I have no idea what I'm going to do, and I just start messing around, and in like 10 minutes, I have something. So, yeah, it's different. All the time.
Do you layer your guitars? Like, and there's, you have a lot of guitar work. So like if you come up with a line, are you doubling it and tripling it and then just kind of panning things so it sounds?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty much at heart, I would say that I'm basically a rock, a metal kind of guitar player, you know? So yeah, I remember, you know, back at school, it was so hard for me to play jazz, you know, it drove me insane. You know, trying to follow the chord charts and all that stuff. It was so difficult, you know? And yeah, I just knew how to play fifths and palm muting and that basic shit. So,
well, you know, it's kind of like one of those things that's good that you got that exposure to see how that works, because I'm still chasing jazz charts in a way, just to be able to kind of incorporate some of that stuff in my writing, because, you know, music, you know, it's like you can draw, like there are metal songs that are completely drawing from you know, Bach concertos, and you know, like the way they're setting up their compositions and
even yeah,
tonal harmony, you know.
Yeah, well, the thing about rock music is that in some way it always has been linked to classical music, you know. Guys like Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, playing neoclassical, you know, the harmonic minor scale, you know, and the Phrygian dominant, whatever, you know. And yeah, jazz is sort of an old style of music, you know, but you can still explore it in different ways and add modern elements to it. So it's so versatile, you know, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it, you know, the sky's the limit, pretty much.
So was Dream Theater the band that you first heard that made you want to pick up a guitar? And how old were you when you picked up a guitar?
Well, I started playing guitar when I was 16 years old. You know, I got my first Ibanez. yeah, it was Yngwie Malmsteen, actually, you know?
Oh, wow.
It was, yeah, I saw a video of him on YouTube playing a guitar solo, you know, when he was on his early 20s or something. And he blew my socks off, you know. So I was so impressed. It's like my mouth, my jaw hit the floor pretty much. You know, I was completely floored and amazed. And it was like, how the hell is that possible?
Right.
You know, because
it's amazing when you see somebody that's so good at what they do that it inspires you to start that journey. I think that's such a, that's the best thing you can do for anybody, you know.
Yeah, it's like it was so incredible for me, you know. It was incredibly inspiring to see someone achieve such level of proficiency at their instrument, you know. But eventually, you know, with time, you know, through the years, it became a little bit too repetitive for me. So I branched out and started listening to other kinds of music, you know. And in my early 20s, you know, I started with progressive rock, Green Theater, you know, Rush, and yeah, that's my core sort of thing, I would say. Yeah,
Rush and Dream Theater are some of my favorites, just because they're progressive and musical. I think there's a way to show chops in a really musical way and also kind of flex the hustle, but also make it in like a through composed kind of way that makes it exciting and beautiful, you know.
Yeah, well, the thing about, you know, that particular band, Dream Theater, you know, they have created amazing music, but sometimes it gets too self-indulgent, I would say, you know? Yes. It's like, why do you have to write a freaking 50-minute song of noodling around, you know, and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know? It can get a little bit too soulless, I would say.
I find that that's why I don't listen to them all the time, because I can get into a zone and really appreciate like how magnificent it is to be able to play like that and write like that. But then I lose interest because it becomes the same color. Like it's all one shade and there's not enough like virtuosic things happening on the writing or arrangement side or even just like the sense of melody, you know, something simple.
It's all about finding the right balance of elements in your music, you know. So you need to have an interesting chord progression, you need to have interesting melodic lines, interesting sounds. It's a combination, you know, pretty much.
And speaking of which, let's play, what do you want to play first? Let's play your first track.
Well, I think I want to play this song called Descending Into Madness, which is the first song of my third solo album released in 2018, 2 years ago,
All right, here it comes. Renan, play it on.
We'll be right back. embrace it or beat it. I warn you, there's no going back. A sense of safety, far gone from the light, now you're trapped inside the cell of decay and corrosion. It makes you go numb. And break through the walls of seclusion, holding you down. Don't fall to despair. Free yourself and try to reach out for the light. Let it come in, cast the darkness away.
Guitar solo, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Dude, you know, there's a lot of Pink Floyd elements in what you're doing. I hear
really?
I hear a lot of Pink Floyd, and I hear a lot of Tool, too. Do you listen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Oh, that's
and
great.
the chorus with all the harmonies and stuff, and how you're treating all the delays and everything. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, dude, what a great guitar solo. Did you do that in one take? Did you cut it up into little pieces? How did you do it?
No, actually, you know, I wish I could play like that in one take, you know? Yeah. I just build it up, you know? I
tend to do that. I'll start with an idea, and then I'll end up not liking the second half of it or the second third. So, but
right.
You know, it sounded like one, like, beautiful composed idea. It's just awesome. So tell me how you went about it.
I'm sorry?
Tell me how you went about it. You started with which part?
Oh, well, you know, yeah, I started with the very beginning riff. You know, it's like an augmented fourth or something, you know, like the tritone thing,
right?
I guess. So it has that obviously evil sort of sound, you know. And I wanted to make a song that pretty much talks about, you know, going from darkness to light kind of thing. You know, this guy that is going into despair, you know, going into dark places, you know, and he's like struggling to find the light again, you know, in his life or something like that. You know, but that's basically the concept of the song pretty much.
Well, you hear it too, because the verses are really dark and brooding. And then the chorus has like such a positive spin and a lift. That's some of my favorite writing right there. When you have like kind of like minor chords or something dark, and then the chorus is this total lift. I mean, that's like the biggest way to win over the ear. You know?
It's It's pretty much, you know, like a response kind of thing. You know, and it's sort of uplifting, maybe. You know, to have that feeling. You know, that. It's not like dark all the time, you know. It has that contrast kind of thing, you know.
Well, what's cool too is you really layered space in there. Like even at the very beginning, you have the drums just do a little fill, and then just kind of wait for things to kind of like elevate. So it's a good use of space with that composition. I loved it.
Yeah,
really.
Thank
you. And I heard some sweeping guitar licks, but not too much, just enough,
I think the most complicated thing that I did on that solo was an alternate pick and run. You know,
just like you were doing like intervals. You were doing like
it's like that kind of 16 notes or something, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very John Petrucci sort of thing, you know. So yeah, but I would say that I cannot play like John because he's just a monster, you know. But I would say that the thing that I got from him is his way of composing his guitar solos. You know, that's the main thing I got from him. That's why my solos are so melodic, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Now what I try to do, I either come up with, like, on this last record I just did, I composed the solo. And ironically, it took me about 30 or 40 takes to get the right feel, even though I knew all the notes, where they were going to land and where it was going to be. But I would rush a little section, or I would just like not be as fluid, you know, like it's almost harder when you compose like that. Whereas there's a couple guitar solos where it's just in the moment. I'm like, I'm just going to play what I feel. And those I always prefer those now, because now I feel like the best way for me to go about a guitar solo, it's like, I'll come up with an idea and then say, okay, now I'm just going to record and try to hit certain points of that idea when I go to them. So it's like footholds. And I try to get those are the airiest and coolest solos that, you know, I find the most satisfying musically for me. So it's
right.
I love hearing when guys know how to play and shred, how they kind of think about their guitar solos, kind of the way a songwriter thinks about their compositions.
Yeah.
And you did that with both.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the thing about, you know, solos is that I would say that I suck at improvising, you know? it's like it's not really my thing, because when I improvise, I usually don't know what I'm doing on the guitar, you know?
Right.
But the solo itself, I can hear it very clearly in my mind, you know? I can hear the lines, I can hear the phrasing, I can hear the scales, everything. So that's why I always compose it. And it's always easier for me to do it that way, basically.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I find myself, I'm kind of the same way when I'm doing a live show. Doing a guitar solo is not as exciting to me at a live show because I'm thinking so many options and where I could go. Yeah. I'm not getting the idea. Whereas when I'm in a studio, I find that I can kind of compose an idea,
yeah,
get to the place that I want to hit those ideas, and then I'm able to capture something with a little, yeah, bit more control. I think a lot of it's that control. So what I've been working on now, it's like I've been trying to just be consistent with ideas, whether it's a rhythmic thing or just, yeah, knowing when to hit certain things so that when it comes time to improvise, I know I can, yeah, do a little bit of adjusting
that, yeah, way. I understand. You know, I mean, it's different. I mean, playing in the studio versus playing live, yeah, very different situations, right? And it also is different when you're playing different kinds of music, you know, different styles and different genres. I'm kind of, how would I say this, structure in a way, you know? It's like very methodic, maybe.
What guitar did you use for this song? Or what guitars?
Well, I can show you now. I have this, my can you see the guitars there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used this one.
All right.
Yeah, it's an Ibanez Prestige.
It looks like a flamed maple on the top, right?
It is. It is actually an orange flamed guitar top.
And yeah. What are the pickups? Do you know?
Well, I have no idea. They sound good.
and what did you use? What did you use for your guitar sounds? Did you use like waves, or did you use something like in reverb that gave you that tone, or did you use an amp? How did you do it?
Well, you know, I do have a Mesa Boogie Dual Rectifier Road King 2 head.
Nice.
Which is pretty. It's pretty much like the king of the dual rectifiers, you know, because it has all the bells and whistles, you know.
Yeah,
it's such a complex amplifier, you know. I'm not going to get into details about the specs and stuff because it's just too much. But lately, you know, I've been getting kind of lazy, you know, and with that stuff, I just usually, you know, grab a virtual instrument, you know, on my PC and just find something that I like and then just get it done, basically. What I used on this particular song was Revolver 4.
Hmm.
That's an amp sim or something, you know, right? Amp modeling software, yeah.
Right. You know, what I like about using those, especially with digital recording, is you can alter the sound so easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the greatest thing about it. Like, I just did a record on analog tape. You cannot alter things. It's like,
yeah,
once it's in there, it's in there. That's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's,
you know,
there's a convenience that I really love. If I feel like I love this guitar tone on Monday, but on Wednesday, I want to completely change it, all I got to do is click the mouse and I can instantly do that. That I love. Yeah. Kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, times have changed. Yes. You know? And I would say for the better, you know. I mean, the idea at the end is just to simplify our lives as musicians, you know, because what matters the most is the music itself.
Right.
You know?
And what did you use for the vocal mic?
Well, actually, I think I didn't even use a condenser microphone on that.
Wow.
You know, I used this Audix OM7. Vocal microphone, which is basically used for live performances, you know, it's the one that
you like enough, like, kind of, like, you can hit the mic hard that way. Is what's the
No. On the opposite, you know, that microphone has extremely good isolation. So it doesn't capture the sound around it at all.
Wow.
So you have to be really, really, really close to it when you sing. That's, you know, amazing. And I drive the preamp on my audio interface, you know, quite hard, I would say. So, yeah, it's a very clean microphone, and it allows me to scream my lungs out without distorting, you know, without having peaking, you know, transients and stuff on my recordings. So, yeah. And the screams that you hear on the song, you know, I cheated a little bit, you know, with distortion plugins, you know, like the Waves Butch Vig vocals.
Right.
So, yeah, because I cannot scream that way, you know, and I don't want to ruin my voice while I'm doing that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Smart. That means you'll be able to do it in your 60s and 70s, man.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm mainly a studio musician, you know. I would say that I'm a very reluctant live performer, you know, because I've done it a few times, you know, and I don't really feel comfortable. You know, I know that the energy is great, but I feel so shy about the whole thing, you know.
I love and hate, not hate, but I love and I have my disdain for both. It depends. Like, I can sit in a studio all day long and then I miss the interaction of a live show. I can do a ton of live shows and then I miss the intimacy of being in a studio. It's like they're kind of like the yin and yang. I kind of need
absolutely
to explore both, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you do one thing too much, you start to get bored, right? I mean,
yeah.
So yeah, it's all about balance. Always.
And how long do you think you take for, you know, when you do a record, how long do you think you take?
To make a whole album, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say 7 or 8 months.
Yeah, that's about how long I take. I think on average 9 or 10 months from the time we walk into the studio or the time I sit even at home and do a record to the final thing with artwork and pictures and all that stuff.
Yes.
I have the CD, it's about 9, 10 months. Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
It's a song called Cloudburst. And that's a song from my fourth solo album called A Dream Inside of a Dream. And it's actually the last song on that album.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it. Run in. Play it on, man.
All right. No, that's not the one.
Let's stop.
Thank you.
beautiful song, man. Beautiful
Thank
song.
Thank you so much.
It's very Jar of Flies, Alice in Chains meets Pink Floyd again, and a little bit of Queen.
Really?
It's definitely got those elements. You got those guitar harmonies.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the record Alice in Chains, Jar of Flies.
Not really. You know, I mean, I know Alice in Chains. Okay, I would
check it out. Yeah. You'll love it because there's a lot of elements of this song that comes from some of the instrumental stuff they do on that record.
That's really interesting. It's really interesting. You know, when people tell me, you know, that they can hear things on my music that I'm not even aware of. You know?
Yeah, you know, it's I love that because, you know, all music kind of stems from some kind of influence, even if it's subconscious. You know, it's like
absolutely.
You know, I got a lot of Van Morrison references when I first started making records. And I didn't know that much of his music. And now I'm like much more into his music than I was at the time. And so it was like kind of like a subconscious thing that maybe I was putting that stuff in there. But you definitely have that like brooding Pink Floyd thing with the atmospheric sounds and all just like the lilting melodies. And then you have this definite Alice in Chains, Jar of Flies, which is one of my favorite records. It really is one of the best records. And then those guitar harmonies are very Queen because they're like, they have a hint of being progressive, you know?
You know, that's very interesting, you know, because now that you mention it, well, Queen was actually my first rock band as a little boy.
Wow. You know? Really?
When I started listening to music in English, you know, when I was like 7 years old or something. I remember listening to Queen for the first time and I went crazy, you know. So my dad, well, I'm old enough now, I'm 36 years old. So I got all the cassettes, the original cassettes, the entire discography, you know, and I will listen to that to death pretty much. So, yeah, I never thought about the Brian May influence, you know. That's very interesting.
It's there for sure. And you know what?
I love Brian May, man.
And little fun fact, I went to a pizza place down the street from my house and I was eating there and I saw Brian May eating with his wife, like right the next table. And I was oh my God, that's Brian May. And my girlfriend turns around. She's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, no, I know that's Brian May. And so the owner of the pizza place, he and I are friends. I'm like, hey, man, is that Brian May? He's like, yeah. And I was like, you mind if I go talk to him after he finishes? He's like, yeah. So I went up to him and I said, Brian, I'm a huge fan. Queen was a big influence on me. And I said, there's something on my record that we did with guitar harmonies that was very Queen. And I just want to say thank you for the music. And I gave him one of my records and I was like, just thank you. I love all the things that you do. And he's like, oh, right, man. I'll definitely listen to it. He was really cool. And it was just amazing. Cause he is like one of the most badass musicians. Did you know he made his own guitar?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
He built his own guitar.
I know that. I think his father helped him or something, you know?
He's a badass.
And the whammy bar thing was like a piece of a motorcycle or something, you know. And the neck of the guitar, I think he got it from a chunk of wood from a fireplace or something, you know. So it was incredible, you know.
It makes sense to me when you say that you were listening to all those cassettes. That's how music works. It's like all those sounds are subconsciously playing in your creative imagination. And they're lodged in these little spots. So your instincts are created by what you're hearing as you're formulating what music is to you at that stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say that when you listen to music, you know, for the first time and it makes an impact on you, it never leaves you, you know? So you may stop thinking about it, but it never goes away.
I got to tell you something really funny. Otis loves your music because every time we started a song, he's walked in. every time. So you're two for two. Otis has walked in at the start of every song you played, and then he walks out. So he loves your music. He's a big fan already.
Oh, wow. The doggy you're talking about, right?
Yep. See, he just walked in.
That dog is so cute, man.
He just walked in. He's walked in twice only for your songs, and then he leaves.
Oh, wow. Over.
So funny. Well, what guitar did you use on that song?
I'm sorry?
What guitar did you use on that song?
I'll show you. I used my Canned Diablo Red Fender Stratocaster.
Nicely. Yeah, sounds great. Very David Gilmour. Like the weird thing is you have a lot of David Gilmour phrasing in even.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, totally. And he's
Thank you so
one
much.
Of my favorites, man. He's one of the best.
Thank he's you so much. You know, I love David. You know, he's such a soulful player, you know.
Soulful.
He has so much soul in his... I mean, every single note he plays, you know, it oozes freaking soul and love.
Yeah, and you know what? The one thing I really love about him is he creates power with space. I think
probably
more than most guitarists... He creates a lot of power with not the licks that he plays, but when he plays things and when he kind of goes for things. Because, man, and you got that thing because you're creating that with everything that you're playing on that last track. How many instruments are on that? I heard two guitars, bass, drums, and then I heard some atmospheric, almost like...
Yeah, well, you know, I had this picture in mind, you know, about clouds, obviously, you know, on a sunset. So basically, you know, the picture that I have on my Facebook cover, you know, on my profile, it's just a bunch of clouds in a sunset, you know, like orange kind of thing. And I just had this picture in my mind of clouds going really, really like in fast motion or something. How do you say that? It's like
clouds in motion. Yeah.
It's like really going really, really fast, you know, like when you're playing a video really fast and the clouds are going like really quick. So I had that idea in mind. So I wanted to create something that had a lot of space. And I think I achieved that effect with the snare sound, which is very drenched.
In reverb.
Soaked in reverb, pretty much. Yeah.
It almost sounded, it had
some and delay.
Oh, I was going to say, it almost sounded like you had a chorus or a delay on it.
It has a delay.
Yeah, totally. It was tight.
The pa-pa-pa kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, I really had that picture in mind. I knew what I wanted to do, so I just did it.
I loved it. And so far, that's one of my favorites. It's a beautiful,
Thank you.
Beautiful song, man. Let's Thank play you. Something else. What do you want to play next?
Well, the last song, I guess it's called The Chase. Well, this is part of my fifth solo album, which I released on July this year.
Right.
It's by far the darkest album I ever done. And it's all instrumental. There are no vocals on it. So basically my idea with this album was to create something with the Ghost Rider virtual instrument by Steven Wilson. So it's basically a collection of sampled instruments that he created with East West Sounds. So it's basically a collection of drums, bass, guitars, pianos, vocals, organs, and no synthesizers, just organic sounds that he took and processed in different ways so he could achieve sonic textures. And it's really interesting because the whole thing has its own vibe, so to speak, you know? It's like it has a sound to it. It has like a musical personality. And it's a lot of fun. So I was like, last year, I was like, what if I create a whole album using this thing? And it was like, well, hell yeah. Let's do it.
That's awesome.
That's pretty much.
All right, let's play it. Renan, let's play it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. That was awesome, man. And look, look who made his appearance. Three for three, man. Three for three. He came in. Yeah, man. He came in last 2 minutes, man. It's crazy.
How old is he?
He is 5 going on 6. He's usually not allowed during interviews, but we've made an exception today. He just busted through the door. Hey, let me ask you, Mauricio. When you were making that, I love the influences. It has like almost a Pearl Jam meets Tool kind of vibe. What were you kind of using as your main kind of like driving force in the composition?
For this particular song, you know, I would say it's a very abstract concept. You know, I just wanted to have sort of like, how do I say this? Like a cinematic kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
A song that could be part of a soundtrack sort of thing, you know? So it could be, you know, like...
It's anthem, music for sure.
Music like... made for a movie scene or something, you know, that kind of cinematic sort of thing. You know, that was my goal, pretty much.
And I also love the driving sounds of the bass and the drums too. You did some.
Oh cool. Yeah, it's different. It's different. Yeah, it's a different kind of song. You know, I like that
high pitch. What did you use for the high pitch? Kind of like a MIDI sound. It was like almost like a keyboard, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Beep, 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 beep. I don't even remember the name of the sound itself, but every single sound that you hear on that song was created with the ghostwriter. You know, that was I did it on purpose. You know, I wanted to do absolutely everything with the ghostwriter and not use anything else, you know, because I have tons and tons and tons of software, you know, that I use with Reaper. But for this album, I was committed to create something only with Ghostwriter, just to have that energy, you know, just to have that sound on it.
Yeah, I loved it because it's got it really has like a Tool. I really hear a lot of Tool and Pink Floyd in what you're doing, and some of those those bass driving sounds were very early Pearl Jam, you know, like
that. Yeah,
that's
I think the aggressive guitar sound, you know, in the middle section is blended with a Moog synthesizer or something, you know, it's a combination between guitar and synthesizer. Not synthesizer, but I don't know. It's just a Moog sound or something. Not really sure. I don't remember. You know, it's just, I'm creating music all the time, so it's like I don't remember.
No, you know what? It's like documenting what you're experimenting with at that time. Mauricio, you know, as we sign off, where can people find your music? What's your website or what's the best way to find your music?
Well, you know, people usually, you know, go and buy my music at Bandcamp. You know, they can just type in Mauricio Ibanez music.
Spell it out. People are dumb.
Let me check that out real quick. Hang on a second, please. So it's just, I need to get internet on my on my PC, I mean.
No problem.
Hang on a sec, please. So it seems that I don't have internet connection for some reason.
That's all right. No, just spell out your name. Just spell out your name so people can find you.
Oh, hang on. I have internet now. So it's... MauricioIbanez.bandcamp.com.
So MauricioIo.
Yes.
IBanez.bandcamp.com.
Yeah. That's basically my main page, you know, where people can listen to the music and support my work, you know, because that's how I actually make some money from this. You know,
you should be making money because you are making a lot of music, and it's really well done. It's like well crafted.
Thank you so much.
And you know what? It's like don't ever stop making music, being prolific, and just being driven, because the world needs it, man. The world needs art. And like, I'm sure you've seen when people are in this pandemic, they're relying on art to kind of get them through the days, you know, to
yeah.
a little bit of inspiration. So
yeah,
it's on us artists to create constantly so that people are, you know, excited and inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say that, even if music, you know, the value, the monetary value of music has fallen, I would say that music is more important than ever now, you know, with this particular situation that we have now. You know, music is just so important for everyone. You know, we need it, you know, we all need it.
What are you working on currently?
Well, several things. I have several parallel projects that I'm working on, you know. So, well, last year I started a parallel career, you know, as Sir Vocaloid, which is basically my pseudonym for a Vocaloid producer. So I'm creating music with these Vocaloids called Rin and Len Kagamine. I'll show you just hang on a sec. Can you see them?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, those two kids, you know. So, yeah, I bought this software at Big Fish Audio. And it basically comes with the bundle with Japanese and English voice banks. But I don't know that much Japanese to work, you know. So I do everything in English, basically. And right now, I have one album of that released. I did it last year. But so far, I've created four albums of that. So wow. There are three more albums that I haven't released yet. And yeah, I created a separate Facebook profile for that and got all the otaku people in there, you know, because it's pretty much related to the whole anime world and stuff. So, yeah, people love that stuff, you know.
You make me feel lazy because you got so many things going on, man. You're fire.
Yeah, I have the Vocaloid thing on one side. I'm also working on a progressive metal album with friends, you know. It's sort of an international project, you know, because I have friends from the U.S. and Japan working on it. Well, I do the music by myself, but they record their real performances. So that is really, really interesting because I can do it all by myself if I want to. But then these guys take my ideas and they go through the roof. You know what I mean? It's like when I hear them back, I'm like, oh, holy shit, that feel, that drum feel, man. It's like I get shivers, you know? That's
the beauty of collaborating, man.
It's beautiful, especially when you're working with good musicians. You know, it's like they can do so much more. You know, they can elevate something good to something great. So that's really, really inspiring. Yeah.
Well, Mauricio, you've been an incredible guest. We look forward to a lot more music from you. And when you release all your other records, we want you to come back and be a guest again, and we'll have you back, okay?
Thank you so much, Nikki.
It was such a pleasure to interview you, man.
There's going to be a new album probably by the end of this year. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, likewise. Hopefully I'll finish mine before you finish yours. you got three more records than me right now. This is crazy. Well, good for you, dude. I love seeing the fire just kind of running through you. And keep it up, man. Yeah. I expect to see a lot more music and can't wait for it, okay?
Likewise, you know, I mean, I love your music too, you know, and I'm looking forward to see you again and talk about music, which is what we love.
Well, maybe we'll off the interview, we'll talk about a collaboration. How about that? We'll make that happen.
Oh, that will be fucking amazing. That will be really, really great.
Right on. Well, Marisa, you stay healthy, stay safe, stay inspired.
You too.
Thank you for being a guest, and we'll have to catch up more when you come back and be a guest, and we'll start collaborating on something, okay?
Definitely.
Awesome, man.
Keep in touch.
Take care.
All right. See you. Be good. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.